This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you Tuesday, May 1st, 2006. On February 10th of this year, after 13 days of deliberations, a federal jury in New York City returned a guilty verdict in the case against Lynn Stewart, attorney Lynn Stewart. Lynn Stewart is the court-appointed attorney for Sheikh Omar Abdul Rahman, the blind cleric, who is now serving a life sentence after the federal government had accused him and a jury convicted him of masterminding the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center. The jury in the case against Stewart found her guilty of 5 counts of defrauding the government, conspiracy, and providing support for terrorism. She had been indicted by a grand jury in New York on April 8, 2002, and her sentencing will take place on September 25th of this year. She faces the loss of her ability to practice law and 30 years of imprisonment. The National Lawyers Guild has published a very important pamphlet, The Case of Lynn Stewart, a Justice Department Attack on the Bill of Rights. They state that the case of Lynn Stewart is alarming, not just for what it means for her future and her family, or even for the criminal defense bar, but because it is part of a profoundly dangerous attempt to circumvent the Bill of Rights and rewrite the Constitution by practice and administrative fiat. They list other efforts as part of the federal government's attempt to circumvent the Bill of Rights, rewrite the Constitution, and, we will say, impose a state of terror and martial law in this country. Other pieces of the effort include, 1, the scandalous practices of Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo. 2, establishing a precedent for holding people, including juveniles, in custody indefinitely without lawyers, charges, or trials. 3, declaring the ban against torture and treatment of prisoners of war as defined in international law since 1949 obsolete and affirmatively embracing methods it condemns. 4, rendering people to so-called friendly governments condemned for practicing torture in order to use its fruits in U.S. courts. 5, creating administrative shortcuts to avoid the privacy protections provided by judicial warrants or subpoenas. 6, obtaining library and internet records through the Patriot Act. 7, jailing and deporting immigrants by the thousand. And 8, reshaping the federal judiciary in an attempt to make permanent these and other features of the administration's agenda. Today on Taking Aim, the terrorist state targets Lynn Stewart, the destruction of democratic rights. Today on May 1st, 2006, May Day. Ralph?
I think it's appropriate to indicate to our listeners, brothers and sisters, that this discussion about the assault upon Lynn Stewart and her companion, her lifetime companion, Ralph Poynter, longtime militants in support of the rights of the oppressed. In every aspect of their lives, they've been there in front, defending immigrants, defending the African-American poor, defending those who are most vulnerable and most targeted by the oppressor state. They themselves are now the centerpiece of the government's assault upon the rights of us all, and in particular the all-out assault upon the elementary premises of that bourgeois American revolution of the 18th century, that people have the right to a defense, that the inviolable due process wherein one is presumed innocent until proven guilty should be thrown out, that the responsibility of an attorney is to do all in their power to defend those who are most vulnerable, those who are accused by the state, and to do everything within their capacity to assert the rights and the evidence and the claim to innocence of those who are targeted by the oppressor state. And I think it appropriate, Maya, that we discuss as well that the Million Worker March, of which I was communications director, when it mobilized the rank and file of working people to develop a political program and an agenda in our name, forging the fight back on our own, in our own name, independent of the two parties of capital, we sought 1 year ago to launch a movement to reclaim May Day. May Day, which is the result of the American workers' struggle, the Haymarket Martyrs, the movement that mobilized rank-and-file working people to link up with the struggles of those oppressed abroad, which indeed became the International Day of Worker Protest, celebrated by workers all over the world, initiated by the American working class itself in struggle, and immediately seized upon by that bureaucracy, what we would call what Lenin, in fact, called the labor lieutenants of capital, emasculated May Day and transferred it to what? Something called Law Day, something called Labor Day, unrelated to the actual origins of May Day as a day of struggle. This is not unrelated, as the working people mobilize and the immigrants, who are the most vulnerable sector of the working class, are asserting their rights in numbers unprecedented before. This is central to the assault upon the rights of us all, and it is embodied in the case of Lynn Stewart. It is embodied because the case of Lynn Stewart touches on the role of the United States government in fomenting the events of 9/11 and the antecedent and preparatory event, the bombing of the World Trade Center in 1993. As we mobilize today, as hundreds of thousands of immigrants and working people take on the state, the centerpiece, indeed, of the assault upon us all is embodied in the trial and conviction and the sentencing pending of Lynn Stewart. One more point about this, brothers and sisters. We talk about documentation. Who are the undocumented? Working people on either side of a border who are subject to exploitation on an unparalleled basis, the destruction of 500,000 jobs in Mexico through NAFTA, the elimination of the main gain of the Mexican Revolution, namely the ejidos, or collective and cooperative agriculture, destroyed by NAFTA, with the peasants driven off the land and providing a reserve army of labor, exploited on one side of the border and enticed into this country, over 6 million doing all the agricultural work and working in what? Labor camps throughout the Carolinas, in camps where there are machine gun turrets and dogs, with Baldomar Velasquez and the Farm Labor Organizing Committee engaged in defending those rights. Who are the undocumented? The huge corporations with their offshore accounts, the $3 trillion of the Pentagon's nominal funds that have disappeared without a trace, according to the accounting office of the United States government. Who is undocumented? Those who conspire to engage in a criminal conspiracy against us all with the 9/11 events and the antecedent event. The mobilization of working people in the immigrant rights movement is a tribute to the lifelong efforts of Ralph Poynter and Lynn Stewart, who have been at the center of this struggle for their entire adult lives, and that is why they are not merely a symbolic expression of the struggle against the oppressor state, but they are at the very center, indeed, of the assault on democratic rights that this trial represents.
And at the end of the program, we will list many things that you can do today and in the coming weeks in support of Lynn Stewart and in support of immigrants and in support of us all as we move to transform society so that we are the people who are empowered. Now, let us go on to the case against Lynn Stewart. This is particularly important, and we will also, as Ralph mentioned, talk about the false flag nature, the unjust conviction of Sheikh Omar Abdulrahman, accused of masterminding 1993, which in fact was an FBI operation. That is right. As we've discussed before on Taking Aim, the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center is among the false flag operations. It was a staged event by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And before we discuss the provocative nature of that 1993 event, let's look particularly at the next stage in the war against working people here in the United States, which is destroying the right to counsel. And that is very important in the case of Lynn Stewart. First initiated by Attorney General John Ashcroft and staged by none other than, who is now the special prosecutor, Patrick Fitzgerald, but at the time was a federal, working as a federal attorney involved in many of the so-called anti-terrorism cases and who has been the primary persecutor of Attorney Lynn Stewart.
Maya, Patrick Fitzgerald was the point man and the prosecutor in the frame-up of Sheikh Omar Abdulrahman. Patrick Fitzgerald worked with Michael Chertoff and the Federal Bureau of Investigation in the preparation of that targeted prosecution. And what's most important about that, as we will document throughout this program, is that the New York Office of the Federal Bureau of Investigation initiated, organized, prepared, and supplied the explosives and the wherewithal and the patsies for the events of 1993. And organized the frame-up of Sheikh Omar Abdulrahman. This was a coordinated effort with Ashcroft, the song-singing Christian fundamentalist, this slightly deranged and psychopathic figure who enjoys the role of being the head of the United States Justice Department, appropriately so, given the nature of the state. He is the architect of the engineered events of 1993, as he is the architect, along with his instrument, Patrick Fitzgerald, in the targeting of Lynn Stewart.
And it is being pursued today by Alberto Gonzalez, the new Attorney General. Alberto Gonzalez, the author of the letters that given to President Bush, the decisions given to President Bush that torture is permissible and it is of the president's personal decision about who should be tortured and how they should be tortured. This is the rewriting of the entire structure of the bourgeois democracy in the United States, acceding to the president the essential dictatorial powers.
But Maya, a very concrete and manifest expression of what this is about came to light in a confrontation last November in Chicago between Attorney General Gonzalez and a professor of law at Notre Dame. In a meeting at which Gonzalez was speaking, that professor of law asked Gonzalez if it would be permissible to take those who have been suspected and accused and to take a 10-year-old child of the accused, bring them in front of the accused and crush the testicles of that child. Yes, crush the testicles of the 10-year-old son of someone held in detention. The astonishing response of Attorney General Gonzalez was that's entirely a matter of why the president chose to order that procedure. And the shocked law professor, who thought he was giving an egregious example, a shocking example, asked the question, wait a minute, are you saying to me that there is no impediment, either constitutional or legal, either judicial or moral, to crushing the testicles of a 10-year-old child, of the son of the of someone you've held in arbitrary detention? And the response was, there is no impediment, there is no judicial restraint, there is no constitutional prohibition. It is entirely a matter of the discretion of the president as to why he found it necessary to make that decision. That exchange occurred, and it was documented and reported. It was interestingly reported by the student newspaper at the University of Wisconsin first, before it was picked up by other newspapers. This is not a digression. This is the criminalization of the state. And that is the underlying gravamen of this assault upon Lynn Stewart and Ralph Poynter, and it is why the case of Lynn Stewart is all of us on trial, our rights on trial, our democratic heritage on trial, the future of our capacity to resist this criminal conspiracy, which is the treason at the top that we have been documenting on Taking Aim, and which the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center, the very gravamen for the framing of Sheikh Omar Abdul Rahman and the targeting of Lynn Stewart. It comes together, brothers and sisters. On May Day, it comes together. It comes together as the central component of our struggle for the removal of arbitrary authority and for the empowerment of the many, as opposed to the dictatorship of the few. That is the nature and character of the capitalist state today.
Ralph, I think it's important to look at the specific counts that were brought against Lynn Stewart. And as I mentioned, it was on April 8, 2002, that the federal government initiated the original counts. And these were dismissed by the judge, Judge Kotel, because he said that they were unconstitutionally vague and overbroad. These were under an anti-terrorism act that had been passed in the 1990s, in 1996, after the World Trade Center bombing of 1993. Remember, a lot of the imposition, the attacks against our civil liberties, derived from these false flag operations that take place. And the setup is the false flag operations, the setup, and then the government imposes stricter measures. And Judge Kotel, however, found that the first charges, the 2002 charges against Lynn Stewart and others in the case, the four people total in the case, were vague. So the federal government came back, superseded the indictment on November 19, 2003, with another seven counts. And these are an example of case of conjoining Lynn Stewart with others with whom she did not relate, and in a way to prevent people from having adequate defense. This is very important, because if you go against Lynn Stewart, who was defending people, you would go against the attorney-client relationship. It freezes this for other cases, for other political prisoners, and other criminal cases, too, because the attorneys will be fearful of defending their clients. Also, we have to note that the federal government has taken it upon itself to monitor, to listen, to videotape, without the knowledge of the attorneys, the attorney-client sessions. And this took place in the case of Lynn Stewart. Count one, by the way, the people involved, aside from Lynn Stewart, were Mohammed Yousri, who was the court-appointed interpreter, Ahmed Sater, who acted as a paralegal. He was an associate of Sheikh Rahman, and another person, Yasser al-Siri, who was not tried. He is in England, where he is held, and he has not been extradited. And he was accused of sending money to the family of Omar al-Rahman in Afghanistan. And he is the head of an Islamic center in Great Britain. And he has not, the U.S. has not been able to extradite him. And he's also accused in Egypt, and the Egyptian government has not been able to extradite him. So the three people on trial were Lynn Stewart, Ahmed Sater, and Mohammed Yousri, and the judge denied the separation of Lynn Stewart's case from the case of Ahmed Sater, who is the person who was accused of a terrorist conspiracy, particularly issuing a false fatwa in the name of the Sheikh to kill all Jews. The counts: one, conspiring to defraud the United States by violating an oath to abide by the special administrative measures that were imposed by the Bureau of Prison Regulations, and the special administrative measures against the Sheikh essentially made him incommunicado. In other words, Lynn Stewart was not to allow the Sheikh to communicate with anyone but his wife, and the violation of it was the release to the press of a statement by the Sheikh. Count two, conspiracy to kill and kidnap persons in a foreign country. This was the count against Ahmed Abdul Sater. And count three, solicitation of crimes of violence. Again, this was for the fatwa against Ahmed Abdel Sattar. And count four, conspiracy to provide material support or conceal material support to terrorist activity. And this is against Lyndon Stewart and Mohammed Yousry. Listen carefully to what that count is. Provide material support or conceal material support to a terrorist activity. Certainly, this was not the actions of Lynn Stewart. Count five, providing and concealing material support to terrorist activity, a count against Lynn Stewart and Mohammed Yousry. Count six, false statements. This was against Lynn Stewart, saying that she falsely promised to uphold the prison rules and abide by the SAMs. And count seven, false statements against Lynn Stewart for falsely promising again in another occasion to uphold the prison rules by abiding by the SAMs. Of all these charges, Lynn Stewart is unequivocally innocent.
Let's put this into its proper context and perspective, brothers and sisters. You have Sheikh Omar Abdul Rahman arbitrarily and without evidence framed for the bombing of the 1993 World Trade Center, absolutely without a scintilla of evidence to show that he had any connection to these events whatsoever. You have the famed civil rights and civil liberties attorney, Lynn Stewart, appointed as the attorney representing Sheikh Omar Abdul Rahman. And indeed, the special prosecutor who frames Sheikh Omar Abdul Rahman, namely Patrick Fitzgerald, imposes as well, without precedent, total confinement and an arbitrary prohibition against any communication by the Sheikh with the outside world, with his family, with his friends, with his community, with his supporters in Egypt. No communication. A blind man who speaks no English, in total confinement and isolation in a remote part of Minnesota, no less. And the attorney who is appointed by the court to defend him, when she seeks to sit and to discuss with her client, finds that the guards are listening to every word, that they are surveilled and monitored in every respect. And there is, as Maya mentioned, she mentioned someone with whom Lynn Stewart had no formal connection other than his presence, namely Ahmed Sattar, a figure who is putting out, without the knowledge of the Sheikh, a fatwa or a decree or a religious injunction to, quote, kill all the Jews wherever they are, unquote, something totally unknown either to the Sheikh or to Lynn Stewart, and even if Lynn Stewart had known about it, there is no bearing on her absolute entitlement to defend her client against the false charges brought against him. But notwithstanding the fact that neither the Sheikh nor the attorney had any awareness of this particular fatwa, and whether it was issued or not has no bearing on the actual merits of, or evidentiary nature of the charges against the Sheikh, the judge refuses to separate the charges against the Ahmed Sattar from the charges against Lynn Stewart, and it poses to any of us with eyes to see the question as to whether the frame-up of Lynn Stewart and the frame-up of the Sheikh, and as we will discuss, the sting operation that was the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center, includes the role of Ahmed Sattar in setting up the Sheikh and setting up Lynn Stewart.
And, Ralph, the trial itself was a charade because 75% of the evidence at the trial was not offered against Stewart or Yousry, but against Sattar. The government had wiretapped Sattar's telephone and fax machine and obtained more than 85,000 conversations over a seven-year period. Unbeknownst to Stewart or Yousry, according to the National Lawyers Guild, Sattar was in contact with militant members of the Islamic group, which is the group of the Sheikh in Afghanistan, London, and Iran and around the world and had issued the false fatwa, as you mentioned. The court denied repeated severance motions both before and during the trial. Now, if 75% of the evidence was about Sattar, and we have to note that it included evidence about Osama bin Laden when the Sheikh is not associated with Osama bin Laden, it included evidence about the bombing of the World Trade Center. It was inflammatory evidence. It had nothing to do about the case against Lynn Stewart or Mohammad Yousry. It was meant to inflame the jury and associate Lynn Stewart with actions of which she was not involved.
Maya, to be clear about this, the provocation, that is the unannounced and secret declarations of Ahmed Sattar, is obviously within the context of the government operation in the blowing up of the World Trade Center in 1993 itself. One aspect of this which I think it's important to emphasize, astonishingly, a good part of the trial, which the judge allowed, was the government giving hearsay evidence from newspapers of Osama bin Laden's presumptive declarations of intent to blow up the World Trade Center, Osama bin Laden's presumptive declaration of declaring a war on all the citizens of the United States, nothing but Osama bin Laden in relation to the coal, in relation to the bombings of the embassies of the United States in Nairobi and in Dar es Salaam. Total hearsay without a scintilla of evidence to sustain it, because these are, as we will show and have shown over the years, total false flag operations.
That's a good point, Ralph. The judge, John G. Kotel, kept saying this is background information, but the jury itself cannot differentiate between what is background and what is creating an inflammatory presence. And whether or not the judge says this is information about Sattar or this is information about Stewart, it would be very difficult for anyone to separate what is happening day after day, day after day, hour after hour. And as I said, the conjoining of Lynn Stewart and the defense of her client with the actions and probably false flag operations of this Ahmed Sattar.
Well, Maya, I think it's also essential that we have to make this point. Lynn's attorney, Michael Tiger, who is a noted civil liberties attorney, was somewhat remiss in the extraordinary failure to seize upon the judge and the government's attempts to associate Lynn Stewart with Osama bin Laden and with all the false flag events imputed to Osama bin Laden. Michael Tiger did not seize upon that opportunity, I have to say it, to put the government on trial. Because, look, brothers and sisters, the coal bombing was done with ordnance, as we've documented and as a matter of record, only available to the Israelis and the United States. Special ordnance that was not accessible elsewhere was involved in the coal bombing. The 1998 bombing of the embassies in Nairobi and Dar es Salaam, which Patrick Fitzgerald was involved in prosecuting and which the government was introducing in this trial, it had nothing to do with this trial other than to inflame the prejudice of the jury and really, frankly, to terrorize the jurors. This, in fact, has been documented by, as we will demonstrate in this show, we've done it over and again, documented by the San Francisco Chronicle and by other publications as a government operation. The principal figure in the blowing up of the U.S. Embassy in Nairobi and Dar es Salaam, Ali Mohammed, was a CIA, FBI operative trained at Fort Bragg, long a principal figure for the Central Intelligence Agency, who had even been assigned to provide the bodyguards for Osama bin Laden by the CIA itself. This is the figure involved in the bombing of the world of the embassies in Nairobi and Dar es Salaam. Patrick Fitzgerald is the prosecutor of the presumptive bombers of the embassy in Nairobi and Dar es Salaam. He is the prosecutor in the 1993 frame-up of the of the blind Sheikh, Sheikh Omar Abdulrahman. He is the persecutor and prosecutor of Lynn Stewart herself. He is the architect of the frame-up of the Sheikh and of Lynn Stewart, and this panoply of false flag operation evidence, or not evidence of the false flag nature, but of the association of these events with Osama bin Laden, with Sheikh Omar, and with Lynn Stewart herself, crystallizes the criminal nature of the state, the treason at the top, and how this is in fact a conspiracy of those in power to destroy the democratic rights of us all, to terrorize the people of the United States, and with their false flag operation and the category of terror, to frighten and terrorize and intimidate and neutralize and emasculate the jury system in the United States and the jurors themselves. One.
We will return in a moment after the station identification.
We are Soweto Gospel Choir. And you are listening to BAI New York. BAI New York. San Bonani.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, The Terror State Targets Lynn Stewart, The Destruction of Democratic Rights, our special program for May Day, May 1st, 2006. Ralph, we're talking about democratic rights. Let's look at these special administrative measures that are regulations that were enacted in 1996 and there are restrictions that are placed on a federal prisoner's communications or contacts with the outside world. This includes visitors and the media. Now, it states that the government can impose this without any judicial review, without any legislative review. This can just be imposed by the Justice Department. And when the government believes, quote, that there is a substantial risk that a prisoner's communications or contacts with persons could result in death or serious bodily injury to persons or substantial damage to property that would entail the risk of death or serious bodily injury to persons, end quote. This is arbitrary. This is only the sensibility of the Justice Department. They don't have to have any review. There is no discussion. It is arbitrarily imposed. It was imposed on Sheikh Rahman, where he was only allowed to have contact with his wife, and it could be imposed upon political prisoners. It can be imposed upon environmental activists. It can be imposed upon animal rights activists. It can be imposed upon anti-war activists. It can be imposed upon any political prisoner, any other prisoner in the United States without any review, without any counterbalance to what the Justice Department imposes. Lynn Stewart could not see her client without signing the special administrative measures. What she didn't know is that not only were, after she signed these special administrative measures, the government began a secret, a covert surveillance of her visits. This was first done under the 1994 Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, the FISA Act, that has been under discussion recently in the news, and also Title III of the Omnibus Crime Control and Safe Streets Act of 1968. She was targeted. Her visits were videotaped, and if you read the transcripts of the videotape, which are on her website, Lynn Stewart, that's LynnStewart.org, you will see that these are benign visits. Yet they were made to seem as if they were discussions in the light of terrorism. Attorney General John Ashcroft secretly amended the SAM regulations October 31st, 2001, without any notice to the public, And as amended, the Bureau of Prisons can conduct videotape and audiotape surveillance with respect to attorney communications with people in federal custody. This goes against what has been sacrosanct in our bourgeois democracy, which is a lawyer-client secrecy, that a lawyer and a client have a right to private conversations. Ralph.
Let me make this particular point in relation to what we call bourgeois democracy, brothers and sisters. We talk about bourgeois democracy not as a criticism or a restriction on the call for democratic entitlement on the part of the many. When we speak of bourgeois democracy, as Marx and Engels do, we're talking about form without substance. We're talking about the formal rights that are violated in the practice. We're talking about power being concentrated in the hands of 1% of the population, owning more than 95% of the rest of us combined. We're talking about the decision-making process taking place outside of the formal representative institutions, so that they are shells. They are form without substance. The criticism of bourgeois democracy is a criticism of the emptying of democratic practice of any meaning or content. And in the process of this trial and in the process of this assault, we see clearly how bourgeois democracy empties democratic control of any meaning or content, because decisions are controlled from outside, because the formal process lacks any real content whereby people can in fact exercise their will. The decisions in this society are not made by the representatives who nominally are speaking for the population. That is a process through which the two parties are funded by the same people. In the last election, the main funder of Bush was the president of Citibank, and the main funder of Kerry was the vice president of Citibank. That is what is meant by the bourgeois emptying of democratic practice of real content. And nowhere does this more clearly come into evidence, if you like, than in this destruction of formal protections in the case of Lynn Stewart. And as the National Lawyers Guild states, central to this effort is invading the confidentiality between attorney and client and the right of an attorney to act for and speak for their client. And that's why the case of Lynn Stewart is so central to the defense of our right, our basic rights for which a revolution was waged, our right to confront our accusers, our right to challenge the arbitrary state, our right to due process, our right to free speech, our right to having the evidence that is real presented in confrontation of the arbitrary charges of the state. On the same day that Bush signed the Patriot Act into law, John Ashcroft announced an amendment to the Bureau of Prison Regulations which authorized the government to conduct secret electronic surveillance of attorney-client conversations of anyone in custody. In practice, this eviscerated the prospect of a trial that is fair. How do you conduct a defense when the government is listening to every discussion you have with your client? How do you conduct a defense when the evidence you are locating is disclosed by surveillance to the government so it can proceed to destroy it? How do you conduct a defense when witnesses for the defense are known to the government who can then terrorize them and prevent them from testifying?
Ralph, also with the interpretation of the special administrative measure and with the special administrative measure, the federal government essentially is burying Sheikh Omar Rahman alive because they are not allowing Lynn Stewart to fulfill her obligation according to the Bar Association's Code of Professional Conduct, which demands, quote, zealousness of lawyers. And they did not allow, with the government restrictions, what they're saying is that by keeping her client's case before the public and trying to gain his release as she was to Egypt, she could no longer act as a lawyer, but in fact she was aiding and abetting terrorism. That's what this is about, burying people alive and preventing their case to come before the public.
Lynn Stewart was the first attorney in the United States subjected to surveillance during her consultations with her client in prison. This was not an aberration. This rule now applies to all counsel in so-called national security cases. This new power was superimposed, as the National Lawyers Guild makes clear, on regulations which already gave the Bureau of Prisons arbitrary authority to impose what are called special administrative measures that people who are represented by attorneys have to have their attorneys limited in their advocacy and their own First Amendment rights unless they are approved by the Justice Department or the prosecution itself. Ashcroft convened a press conference and appeared on David Letterman to announce that the defense of Sheikh Omar Rahman by Lynn Stewart would be the occasion for a full-blown accusation of terrorism against Lynn Stewart herself for defending Sheikh Omar against the frame-up charges that had been launched against him. This is what makes this case seminal, important, and the very heart of the campaign to bring about police state America, to prepare the conditions for martial law, to strip us of the ability to challenge arbitrary authority, to terrorize every attorney in the United States who has to ask themselves, will we lose our ability not merely to practice law, but will we ourselves be put in prison if we defend those who are accused? Note that it is not only Lynn Stewart who was defending Sheikh Omar Abdulrahman, but it was co-counsel Ramsey Clark, the former Attorney General of the United States, and our old friend and comrade Abdin Jabbar, the Palestinian attorney and activist with whom we organized the first march on Jerusalem on the anniversary of Sabra and Shatila in 1983. This was an assault upon Abdin Jabbar, an assault upon Ramsey Clark, an assault upon the entire Council of Defense, those who have the courage to stand up for the most vulnerable in our society. This is an attack on us all, brothers and sisters, and on May Day, and the day when immigrants are defending their rights, Lynn Stewart stands as the symbol of the oppression of us all.
Ralph, it was Abdin Jabbar who many years ago had revealed that the National Security Administration was monitoring his faxes and phone calls. And this was many, many years ago, about 20 years ago, way before the recent revelations of how the government is secretly monitoring telephone calls and faxes and emails and internet use. Let's go and look at 1993, because this is very important to this case, as many other cases, the false flag nature. Ralph Blumenthal, October 28, 1993, New York Times, front page. Tapes depict proposal to thwart bomb used in Trade Center blast. Law enforcement officials were told that terrorists were building a bomb that was eventually used to blow up the World Trade Center. He said that an informer was to have helped the plotters build the bomb and supply fake powder, but the plan was called off by an FBI supervisor who had other ideas how the informer, Imad Salam, should be used. The account, which is given in the transcript of hundreds of hours of tape recordings that Mr. Salam secretly made of his talks with law enforcement agents, portrays the authorities as being in a far better position than previously known to foil the February 26th bombing of New York City's tallest towers. The explosion left 6 people dead, more than 1,000 people injured, and damages in excess of $500 million. This article by Ralph Blumenthal is a tip of the iceberg, and what Ralph, in his article of Who Bombed the World Trade Center 1993, growing evidence points to the role of the FBI operative, Ralph in detail points out the role of the FBI.
Well, Maya, the FBI allowed the bombing to happen. The article in the New York Times in 1993 states clearly, Ralph Blumenthal, that Emed Ali Salem, who was in fact the person who organized the entire event, who proposed the entire event, who set up the Sheikh, that he in fact was providing the explosives from the New York office of the FBI. And Blumenthal documents in this article in the New York Times that when Imad Ali Salem was confronted, he said, look, I was told by my superiors at the FBI that the explosives that we were providing wouldn't detonate. In fact, of course, they did detonate and were intended to detonate, but the New York Times article by Blumenthal is the smoking gun confirmation that this was an FBI operation. In 1993, I wrote an article called Who Bombed the World? The U.S. World Trade Center Growing Evidence Points the Role of FBI Operative. I couldn't get that article published for 3 years, brothers and sisters. I couldn't get it heard on Pacifica. I couldn't get it heard anywhere. And in that article, chapter and verse, I go through the sting operation and the framing of Sheikh Abdulrahman in the matter of 1993. Now, this is a long article with long particulars and documentation, but it's interesting to note that the people who worked at the Ryder rental office, which rented the van to a young man named Salame, were FBI operatives. The FBI agents were disguised as employees of the rental outlet. They, as the Los Angeles Times confirmed, on March 5th of 1993, the Los Angeles Times confirms that from the beginning of this to the end, this was an FBI operation. Let me make clear to you, brothers and sisters, Imad Ali Salem is a high-level Egyptian intelligence officer and a long-standing operative of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. They tried to sheep-dip him later as merely an occasional informant. He was nothing of the kind. He was sent in to the mosque of Sheikh Omar Abdulrahman, without the knowledge of Sheikh Omar, needless to say. He is recruiting young men to come to meetings. And at those meetings, it is the FBI operative who proposes to blow up the Brooklyn Bridge, to blow up the Holland Tunnel, to blow up the Lincoln Tunnel, the Statue of Liberty, the George Washington Bridge, the United Nations. And he is the progenitor of these, what is called the landmark case. The FBI is presenting that proposal to young men on a need-to-know basis. And all the while that he's proposing these things, he's wearing a wire, he's taping this, he's making transcripts of the wire. And every one of these meetings is memorialized in documents put in the office of the FBI in New York for 6 months prior to the event. Who was involved in this FBI office in New York? Michael Chertoff, Patrick Fitzgerald. They are accessories after the fact. They are participants in the sting. They are the prosecutors. They are the perpetrators. They are the criminals. They are the treason at the top because they are taking their direction, both Fitzgerald and Chertoff, from the Attorney General, from the Federal Bureau of Investigation. This is the model of what we call the false flag operation that we documented with reference to 9/11, and the preparatory event under Bill Clinton, we must emphasize, is the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center. Let me emphasize as well that I documented in this article, by the way, the International Herald Tribune on March 8th, 1993, acknowledges that Joe Valiquette, the FBI spokesperson, confirmed the role of a person named Guzi Hadass of the Mossad, who, in fact, is what? She is the one who arranges the safe house. She is the one who arranges the Ryder rental van. She is the one who coordinates with Imad Ali Salem the provision of the explosives. And most importantly, the London periodical Impact on March 12th, and on April 8th, revealed that on February 26th, an Israeli intelligence group sent an urgent communique over a phone access computer network about the event. This is before it occurs. And the Israeli intelligence communication system, Matara, documents the events of 1993 and communicates them to their operatives before they occur. Israeli intelligence had advanced knowledge of the timing and targeting of the World Trade Center bombing, and, quote, that we will attribute this to known activists from the occupied territories. An Israeli operative of the Shin Bet, Israel's FBI, boasted of the Israeli intelligence capability and advanced knowledge of the bombing was confirmed in the communique disclosed on Matara. Chapter and verse. Guzi Hadass of the Mossad, Imad Ali Salem, the point man for the Federal Bureau of Investigation, framing the Sheikh. The Sheikh had no connection to these events. He had no knowledge of these events. He was set up by design to take the fall for these events. And as soon as Lynn Stewart has appointed his attorney, who is involved in targeting Lynn Stewart as well as the Sheikh? The very prosecutor, Patrick Fitzgerald, and the Attorney General himself, John Ashcroft, and they do this in relation to the Patriot Act. They do this in relation to the destruction of the confidentiality between lawyer and client. They do this in relation to making an attorney who defends her falsely accused client culpable of the very charges that about which she is defending her client. This is a conspiracy, brothers and sisters, of the treasoners at the top who are in process of destroying the democratic rights, the right to counsel, the rights of the accused, as they carry out their own assault upon the people of the United States, the category of terror, the false flag operation that is symbolized by the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center and the framing of Lynn Stewart.
Ralph, it goes even further because Lynn Stewart is accused of the material support for something for which her client is not even involved. Remember, the false fatwa is acknowledged by the government as a false fatwa. It is not the statement of Sheikh Abdulrahman Oman. It is a statement of Ahmed Sattar, of which Lynn Stewart had no knowledge and of which the Sheikh had no knowledge. Speaking about FBI informants, there was also Mahmoud Zaki Zakari, who had been reporting regularly to the FBI since January 10, 1990. And he reported on the residence, the office, and meetings which occurred with the Sheikh and his followers for a period of 3.5 years. So the FBI not only relied upon Salam, they also had Mahmoud Zaki Zakari and working with the Mossad agent Guzi Hadass in 1993. But 1993, the progenitor of the later World Trade Center bombing, as the New York Times says, if you want to understand the bombing of 9/11, 2001, you have to understand 1993, and we say, yes, you have to understand 1993. You have to understand the false flag operation of 1993. But there are other false flags. Let's look at the Nairobi embassy bombing of 1998. That is the planned bombing of the U.S. Embassy in Kenya, which, as Ralph mentioned before, the person involved, Ali Mohammed, an Egyptian-born U.S. citizen, who was involved in the special forces, who trained at Fort Bragg when he was in the Egyptian Army. In 1981, he graduated from a special program for foreign officers at the Special Forces School at Fort Bragg, and who later, when he came to the United States, enlisted in the Army, and he worked at Fort Bragg. He was a sergeant. He trained people at Fort Bragg. He was involved with the CIA, later with the FBI. And this is the man who the government then said was responsible for the Kenya bombing. But in fact, as acknowledged by his superior officer involved in the special forces, this is a man who was a government agent.
Maya, the headline of the San Francisco Chronicle on November 4, 2001, Al-Qaeda terrorists worked with FBI and plotted the embassy attacks. The U.S. Army sergeant who trained Osama bin Laden's bodyguards planned the 1998 bombing of the United States Embassy in Kenya. a U.S. government operative during much of his career, according to sources familiar with the case, the documented example of the false flag operation, chapter and verse, a follow-up article on the 21st of...
That's a previous article.
Excuse me, you're right. The previous article on September 21st, 2001, Bin Laden's man in Silicon Valley, Mohammed the American, was a trained operative of the United States government. And then it goes into chapter and verse about his Army background, his role at Fort Bragg, and the government's involvement in the bombing of the World Trade Center. One of the charges against Sheikh Abdulrahman, because they brought into play everything that was attributed to Osama bin Laden, including bringing down the Brooklyn Bridge, Brothers and Sisters, the London Daily Telegraph on June 23, 2003. The operative unmasked as planning to bring down the Brooklyn Bridge was an agent for the Federal Bureau of Investigation. It was reported yesterday. Ziman Faris, the article documents his role, and indeed there is a whole series of these false flag operations. In fact, the bombing of the Achille Lauro was exposed by Ari bin Menashe as a Mossad operation. The landlord of the two who were accused of being hijackers exposed in CNN on none other than 9/11/02, operatives of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, Jerusalem Post, Mossad behind the Sharm el-Sheikh bombings, 7/23/05, brothers and sisters, this is the essence of the government's conspiracy against us all, the treason at the top, and I want to emphasize that on May 4th, brothers and sisters, Lynn Stewart there will be an important presentation of films and poetry regarding the frame-up of Lynn Stewart, and we urge everybody to attend the Maya, the address of the...
You have the address, Ralph. Go to the Lynn Stewart website. That's Lynn Stewart, LynnStewart.org. For information about the May 4th event, it'll be on the WBAI calendar as well. I'm sorry we don't have the address of the event, but please go to her website. Also, please acquire the National Lawyers Guild publication, The Case of Lynn Stewart, A Justice Department Attack on the Bill of Rights. And in it, they tell you how you can write letters to support Lynn Stewart for the sentencing hearing.
It's important, brothers and sisters, that letters for Lynn Stewart are sent to her attorney, Jill R. Shellow Lane, because these letters should be addressed to the judge, and in your addressing of letters to the judge, you should state what, in your judgment and from your knowledge, are the reasons why Lynn Stewart has been framed, from your judgment and from your knowledge, why Sheikh Abdulrahman was entitled to a defense, from your judgment and from your knowledge, the rights of us all that are at stake in this case. Get the pamphlet, familiarize yourself with this, send in your letters to the judge, to her attorney, and you will find this information, as Maya says, on the website. The community church on May 4th, the event for Lynn Stewart, Chairman Michael Smith of the Center for Constitutional Rights with his own show on WBAI. This is a central theme and mobilization requirement for us all. Lynn Stewart and Ralph Poynter are at the heart of the government's attack on every one of us, her defense, and the rights that are involved in her freedom touch us all and command our support and our mobilization in the process of defending the people of the United States against the treason at the top.
Hold your tongue as we approach the 6 o'clock hour. That address is the Community Church of New York, 40 East 35th Street at 7 p.m. A movie showing Point of Attack. For further information, 212-622-4700. 205-9696.